Welcome to Give Him Hell, Brigham. Jeff, we both have good stories for our fans tonight.
We do. We both have good stories. Yours involves, I think there's a lot more to yours, right? Like, you've got some pain. Well, it started from a very good place. You were doing something very nice for very people who needed it, right?
Yes. And, yes.
It involves a lot of pain. My story's just, it's just me being dumb, but you were punished for doing good.
I mean, you may have financial pain from your story. Well,
I don't. It's financial gain.
Yes. So we were out building. My wife's grandparents live on a little farm in the middle of absolutely nowhere. And when I say middle of nowhere, like, if you looked up BFE, it would say, okay, you're halfway to get into their house. That's how middle of nowhere we're talking here. Actually, while we're on the show here, I'm going to find a screenshot here and drop a pin for you.
Okay.
So you can see how to get to, how do I do this here? Okay, let's see. See if this link works for you that I'm going to put in our little chat, and you can see how middle of nowhere is. And so my wife's grandparents, they live on a little farm out in BFE, Arizona. And
this is nowhere, folks.
Like, the closest grocery store is like 40 minutes away, I think.
Southwest Jojoba?
Yeah,
this is nowhere, folks. I mean, you guys aren't looking at this map, but
Southwest Jojoba, that's a solar farm that's a solar farm right there. But it used to be a jojoba, like, bunch of farms around there. But now it's behind their little house is a solar plant. And actually, I think if you look on these Google Maps, you can see there's a bunch of rocks that you can't quite see it on there. So this actually where they live. General Patton in World War II, that's like where they made their camp and like where he trained people before they deployed in the middle of nowhere. And so there's rocks that are still sitting in, and it almost looks like a blueprint to a house because he made the soldiers like, you have to build your house and like you have to have a kitchen and a living room and a bedroom. And it like, they were just sleeping in tents, like open air, or not even a tent. It was like open air, but it was like he made them go find rocks and then like put them in a line to outline where a house would be as part of their training. But that was a big derailment. But so they live in the middle of nowhere and they're old, health is declining. Grandpa's had a couple strokes. Grandma's hip needs to be replaced. They can't live out there by themselves anymore. So my wife's family all got together last weekend and we're building them a new place to live, a little like 16 by 32 foot guest house right next to my aunt's or my wife's aunt and uncle up in the Phoenix area. And so we're building it along. People started on Thursday. It's mostly done now. Actually, it was done. Well, on Sunday night, started putting the first coat of paint on, then Monday. So they started on Thursday leveling the ground. And then by Sunday night and Monday afternoon, they're finishing the paint and putting the flooring in and painting the interior, and it's done now. So we built the whole house in like 4 days, which is kind of fun. But I was working in the bathroom and in some freak accident, not sure how, 1 second I was hanging like a little horizontal stud to mount a handrail. Cause you know, the old people, when they're getting in and out of the bathtub, they need a handrail so they don't slip and fall. And you can't just hang that in drywall. Mm-hmm. And 1 second I'm hanging them up and everything's going great. And the next second I am screaming expletives because I have a framing nail that is now going through my thumb 180 degrees from the way that the framing nail gun was pointed. So I'm very confused. I don't know how it meant, like, I don't know if it was a ricochet or what happened, but somehow the gun was in my left hand going left to right and the nail was going right to left. And so I had to get in the car and I was sitting in the front seat, breathing very heavily, trying to like not look down and see it in the shock. And my mother-in-law was driving as fast as she could to get me to the hospital. And my wife was sitting behind me, like massaging my shoulders, telling me to relax in the car as I'm freaking out. And so I went, got to the hospital, got checked in, and they gave me some morphine, which immediately made me feel like I needed to barf. So at that point, I didn't feel my thumb anymore. I just felt like I was going to throw up. And then the nausea medication that they gave me with the morphine, that kicked in. And so then after that, I was just hanging out. And then they came and numbed my thumb and pulled it out. So it was, you know, it hurt very badly. Once, I think the initial shock, I don't remember it hurting too much looking back at it now, because I just remember like the shock of it all and breathing really fast and then like freaking out about getting to the hospital. And then, but by the time I like settled into the hospital where it was like, okay, now I'm kind of like calming down and this thing hurts like a mother, there's only like 15 minutes before I got the morphine and like that happening. So, you know, it wasn't that terrible, that thing, but I'm very lucky that it just went through the skin. I mean, I showed you here on the screen, like it just looks like I have two little cuts on my thumb. Like it just
Looks like nothing.
It went straight.
It was a gnarly picture on Twitter of the nail sticking all the way through.
Like, yeah, that was but cool. It missed. It didn't get lodged in my bone. It didn't hit any tendons. It literally just went on the top side of my thumb, just above the knuckle, like straight under the skin, and came out through. So they just numbed it, slid it. Well, they took an x-ray to make sure, because the doctor that was at the hospital was like, if this is in the bone at all, like if this is wedged in the bone or anything like that, like we're sending you to another hospital because you need surgery to fix it. And so, I mean, I wasn't going to like just rip it out myself, because one, that would hurt. I mean, and two, it's like, I need my opposable thumbs are a good thing. It's kind of what separates us from pretty much every other animal on the planet. I would like as a right-handed individual, I would like to have use of my right thumb for the rest of my life. Yeah. So it wasn't like my wife's uncle told me when I got back from the hospital that when he was like 19, something happened. Like he bumped into something when he had a gun, and he drove a nail into his thigh all the way down with a nail gun. And that he just ripped it out. And he was like, but there's a lot fewer nerve endings in your thigh and a lot more meat there, where it's like, you know, you can just kind of grit and bear it and rip it out of your thigh, and you're not going to feel it as much as that. And it's, you know, you could pretty much do anything to your thigh and it will heal fine on its own, right? Because there's a lot more real estate to work with than the delicate extremities of your hands. But that was my story, and it's now I'm very lucky, and I guess I have a good story now.
Yeah, you do, and you have a cool picture. Like, you don't have to tell anybody that it wasn't a big deal at the end, right? You could just show people what was going on.
Say, hey, this happened.
Yeah. I mean, if you shot yourself with a nail gun, here's the nail, show them your thumb, and away you go. Yep. My story is way less entertaining than that. I realized after I guess tweeted it, I put it on Instagram as well, that I was in a casino Monday morning at 8:30. And as I listened to that story back, I'm realizing that I didn't do a very good job of clarifying that I arrived at the casino at about 8:30. If you just watched the stories, it made it sound like I had been at the casino from the Super Bowl through the night until 8:30. And that was not the case. I was there at really about 8 o'clock to cash out tickets that I had placed bets on earlier in the weekend, and I was there to cash out. But
I mean, apparently, it made it worth your while to cash out.
Well, it did. And apparently, though, the Eureka Casino in Mesquite. So for those of you who aren't degenerates, I'm going to say, those of you who don't frequent the casino, the sports book is more often than not, occasionally they're one, like Caesars is a Caesars sports book and a Caesars casino. But by and large, the sports book is actually owned and operated by a different company who's basically subletting their space within the casino. They have some sort of an affiliation that if the sports book is closed, I can take my cash ticket or my tickets to the cages of the casino and go and get cash, and then they settle that next day. So the Eureka Casino, the sports book is a William Hill sports book. And I guess on Sunday night on the Super Bowl, so they closed at about 10, 11 o'clock, which feels dumb. Like, it feels like extend your hours for the Super Bowl. Come on. But they closed at, you know, 9, 10 o'clock, whatever time they closed. Super Bowl didn't end until after they were closed. And a lot of the money in Mesquite, Nevada ended up on the Bucks. And so when the Bucks won and won big, the sports book took a hit. but the sports book was closed. So it was the cages that took this just massive hit, in and all their cash was gone. When I say all their cash was gone, I had a couple of tickets and I tried to just cash out one $600 ticket. I arrived at the casino at 8 o'clock in the morning. Sportsbook didn't open until 8:30. I didn't want to sit around and wait. So I went to the cages and just like, hey, can you guys just cash this out? And they're like, we would love to. We're out of cash. This is a $600 ticket. Like, we're not talking casino money here. We're talking $600. And they're like, dude, we don't have $100 to our name right now. We got to wait for the Brinks truck to bring them their load. Like, they got decimated. So I had to sit around and wait for the sports book. And while I was sitting there, I realized I had a lot of time to reflect. While I was there, there was a sleeper inside the sports book, which apparently is against the rules. You are not allowed to sleep in the casino. And so the pit boss had to come and was clapping, yelping, screaming, waking this person up, because security had to get involved. They threw the guy out. And I just kind of sat there and I was like, man, this is something else. Like, this is what's happening here. And this is my life. It's Monday morning. It's 8 o'clock. I'm in a casino and it just felt weird. And so I put this story on Instagram. Really, the biggest story of my story is the telling of the story. I put this story on Instagram, and my Instagram, I'm not really active on Instagram very often. I'll like stuff. I look at it, but I don't post very often over there. And it's mostly friends and family who follow me, like high school friends. And I realized that they are not aware of my affinity for gambling like everybody else is, right? Like Twitter, my personal life, I'm very upfront about it. I don't care. But my grandparents, people that I don't see very often, they don't get to see that side. So when I opened it up and I let it all out there, I immediately got feedback from my grandma. She was disappointed. My grandma's very, very traditional, very, very straight and narrow. The fact that this is called the Give 'Em Hell, Brigham podcast, she got a little bit upset because we say hell. I mean, that's the kind of traditional grandmother I have. And when she saw casino, I mean, it was bad news. So it led to a whole day. Ultimately, I was able to preserve my reputation by blaming it all on my wife. I said she's money lusting, like just this money hungry, power hungry woman. And that's the reason that I have to supplement my income, because no matter how hard I work, it's not enough for her. And lo and behold, that was enough to get everybody off my back. And they're apparently afraid of Jessica because she's so power hungry. So that worked out well for me.
I mean, I wouldn't have gone that route, but I'm glad you found a reasonable explanation that appeased your grandma.
I felt like I could go that route because there have been multiple people. And when I say multiple, I probably double digits that have reached out to me over the course of the last several months and have asked me why my wife has a crush on Andy Reid. When I first started to shave my head and have a mustache, I realized, wow, I'm bald and fat and have a mustache. I kind of look like Andy Reid. And so I put it out on the Instagram world that the reason I look like Andy Reid is because my wife has this huge crush on Andy Reid, always has. And I'm just doing my best to look like who she wants me to look like. And I've posted about it 3 or 4 times. And people believe me, man. Like, even her own brother, just this last weekend, he asked her, like, in all seriousness, why are you attracted to Andy Reid? Like, so people buy him. So I thought that I've already created this persona that she's this Andy Reid loving kind of a weirdo. Yeah, why not? Why not be a money lusting person as well? I figured it was right on brand.
You know, I can see that. And it's, you really are. You've, for the last 6 months, you've been crafting this Andy Reid alter ego. It's not even an alter ego. It's just, you are becoming one.
And I am the less successful Andy Reid.
But
he did lose and he got smoked. So who's to say I'm less successful?
You know, maybe the Chiefs need a new offensive line coach with how they were playing. But Daryl Funk will not be that offensive line coach, because Daryl Funk was hired by BYU last week. We dubbed in, well, it was right after the show came out last week. It was like, I don't know if it was the same day or was Kloon announced just before the show.
It wasn't like a day or two before.
Yeah, it wasn't. We didn't even talk about it because we had talked about that. It was basically a slam dunk deal. We've gotten Kloon, but Daryl Funk came out of nowhere. And it's tell us what the early, I guess, returns are from what you've talked to with recruits. And, you know, I know we got one that an offer that was extended today. It was this Coach Funk's first offer extended at BYU. And you talked to Parker Brailsford about that. But what's the early returns on Daryl Funk?
Positive. Parker Brailsford is, I talked with Parker tonight. And, or I guess this afternoon rather, but he's excited about Coach Funk. He says that, yeah, the dude's energetic. He's passionate. He knows a ton about football. He's helped a lot of guys get to the league. I mean, really, he has checked all the boxes that recruits talk about, right? And so for Parker, it was good. I mean, it was a very good thing. Now, one thing that I thought is interesting. Now, I'm not going to name names, but I reached out to a number of BYU signees, right? Primarily offensive linemen who are on missions. I reached out to some of their family members. And anyway, as I talked with the people who signed with Coach Grimes and Coach Mateos, I thought it was really, I don't know what the word is, but it was something. They all mentioned Grimes, right? That, hey, we like Coach Funk because he is probably the closest thing to Coach Grimes that we could get. We're sad that Coach Grimes left. We were worried about Coach Grimes being gone, but now that Coach Funk is here, we're willing to stick it out. We think we can make this work. Everything was oriented around Coach Grimes. I don't say this to, you know, belittle the man after he left, because I have been very much the one leading the parade that Eric Mateos was a fabulous recruiter for BYU. Not one of these signees talked about Eric Mateos. They talked about Jeff Grimes. And I thought that was interesting. And maybe that's not surprising. It was a little surprising to me because when I would talk to recruits when they were going through the recruiting process, there was a lot of talk about Coach Mateos. But I thought that was really interesting. The biggest concern that the offensive linemen who have signed had was that Coach Grimes is gone, not that Coach Mateos was gone. And so I think that leads to an interesting discussion that we may or may not have. A lot of people have already had is really this Coach Funk is not replacing, in the eyes of a lot of these players, it seems like he's not replacing Coach Mateos. He's replacing Coach Grimes. And that's going to be really interesting to see what happens. And in my mind, okay, Mateos was going to stick around. The thing with Ryan Pugh happened, and then Mateos ended up leaving. That may end up being an okay thing for BYU. Just given what I have heard from these players and their families, it sounds like there was a lot more trust in Coach Grimes than there was in Coach Pugh or in Coach Mateos, which I thought was interesting. Again, I don't want to – you're not going to find bigger fans of Coach Mateos than here at the Give Him Hell Brigham podcast. We've been huge, huge Mateos fans from day one when everybody was crapping on the hire because he was just fired at Texas State. We were huge on Mateos. We have been really all the way through, right?
Right.
And so this is in no way trying to disrespect him. It's just reporting what I have been told. A lot of focus on Coach Grimes, and I thought that was interesting.
And I think the biggest question that people had about Coach Funk is, well, what, like, he wasn't coaching in 2020. He was let go from Texas State, you know, when Traylor came in, and he didn't is very similar.
UTSA.
UTSA, not Texas State.
Yeah.
Yep. And is Mateos was let go from Texas State, but and he didn't come back, and he kind of had a weird career because he kind of coached smaller schools or he was at Colorado State for a while. Then he ended up at Ball State with Brady Hoke. They had that good year, went to San Diego State. And then he followed Brady Hoke from San Diego State to Michigan and did well at Michigan with the talent that was there. And then after Michigan, it kind of pittered out. And that's kind of so. And then last year he wasn't going and he was out of coaching last year just because it, late staff change and things were weird. But it, And so I'm not sure if he was doing consulting roles similar to what Kevin Kloon was doing for us as well. But it's, you know, coaching is a weird business where it's like, especially as an assistant coach, and not even just as an assistant coach, but especially as an O-line coach, where O-line coaches rarely, for whatever reason, get promoted to being a coordinator and rarely end up becoming a head coach. And so it's kind of like you hitch your wagon to an offensive staff and you ride that staff as far as you can go. So he was on the Brady Hoke train. And when that completely fell apart and Hoke got fired from Michigan, then you're kind of scrambling. And then it's okay, someone needs a line coach, but a staff that is a good staff is not going to be replacing coaches willy-nilly, right? Like it's, so you're looking for someone who's trying to rebuild. And so it's, you kind of, so he went to Purdue, then he went to Indiana State, then he went to UTSA, and all of those places, it was kind of not, well, other than Indiana State, it's like, all of those places, it's kind of like you're not in a good situation. You're getting brought in and it's this hodgepodge together, but things aren't great. And then he was there for the last year before they're like, okay, this coordinator is gone. And when the coordinator goes, all the position coaches are gone too. And maybe you get retained, maybe you don't. But if you're bringing someone successful, they're probably going to bring the O-line coach that they worked with, because that's, they need to count on them. And that's very important. Like it's a weird marriage, especially at the O-line position. And so I wouldn't read too much into it that he hasn't been anywhere. Cause obviously like he's coached some good NFL players. I think hit the biggest knock for him. And from what I reached around and talked to some of the UTSA connections that we built last season, you know, when we talked and we had some other people on the show and kind of what was the concern there and why UTSA may have moved on, it was he had a hard time. It sounded like selling UTSA as a program and recruiting was difficult. And that was similar. It's like, what did it Purdue? And so that may be a problem, but that's also where it's a fit thing, right? Like it's,
well, yeah, I mean, who can sell UTSA and Purdue, frankly?
Right. Like, and so
that's UTSA is a tough sell no matter what. And Purdue, you're competing with Ohio State, Michigan, and Wisconsin. Like that's going to be a tough sell.
Right. So you have to be like, it takes a certain type of tenacious recruiter. And if you are an older guy, maybe you don't kind of connect with the youngins as much as you used to. And it's, you're more of a technician. You're just going to be like a hard ass in practice, getting on them and getting them to work, whatever, you know, that's kind of more of what you're going to do. That's fine. And that can work, especially at a place at BYU where for the most part, you're going to get halfway decent bodies walking through that door, because the honor code and recruiting at BYU is a much bigger, it's a much higher floor than it is a capping ceiling. Like the honor code is always going to prevent, and like the limited recruiting pool of what BYU is always going to prevent BYU from getting like consistent top 25 classes. But it also, the flip side of that is you will never, ever, ever see BYU with like a sub 100 class. Like it will never completely fall apart, and you will always get consistent good bodies that you can train up to be maulers and just get after people in the trenches.
And what it does, the honor code really prevents BYU from knocking on anybody's door and getting in. All right. Like a guy like Clark Phillips at Utah that flipped from Ohio State to go to Utah. He had no connection to Utah. They knocked on their door. He listened. They did a heck of a job recruiting him, and they flipped him from Ohio State. That's huge. BYU is not going to have very many of those. Most BYU recruits are going to have some sort of a connection to the program. And that's because of the honor code, right? Like they'll get the, you know, the Chris Wilcox types, the Isaiah Herons, they'll get those guys that are maybe don't have competing offers, but by and large, a highly recruited kid who does not have a connection to the program is not going to come to BYU. That's just the nature of the honor code. But for whatever reason, we Mormons really like to produce high quality offensive linemen. And it's not just the Polynesian thing. Like obviously the Polynesian thing, there are a lot of LDS Polynesians who have connections to the program, but there's a lot of not Polynesian offensive linemen who are high quality and members of the church. I have no idea why. Why don't we produce more defensive ends? I don't know, but we produce a lot of offensive linemen. And so I'm interested to see how Coach Funk delivers on that, because I truly am a believer that as long as an offensive line coach, as long as the strategy of the offensive line at BYU is big physical, mauling offensive linemen. There is enough of a recruiting pool of kids who want to come to BYU that you are going to have high-level players no matter who is there. Where things go awry is when you get away from big, physical, mauling offensive linemen. Coach Weber wanted, you know, and Coach Doman, frankly, but back in, you know, 2011, 2012, they wanted smaller, athletic, speedy guys to do whatever it was that they were trying to do. I still don't really know what that scheme was, but whatever their scheme was supposedly.
I don't think they knew either at the time.
Whatever their scheme was supposedly trying to be, they wanted smaller offensive linemen. So they broke out of the traditional recruiting pool for BYU and the results suffered, right? But as long as you are going to get, or you are trying to target big, physical, mauling offensive linemen, it's really hard to mess it up at BYU. I just looking at the 2022 class right now, George Mailey is going to be the highest recruit, highest rated offensive lineman in the state of Utah and really on BYU's board. Trent Ramsey is right there close. Both are members of the church. Both have connections to the program. Even if BYU misses on both of them, right? We keep going down the list. Waylon Lapuaho is rated at 85, very solid three-star. Jacob Reese doesn't have a BYU offer right now. He's legit at Brighton. He might be the best offensive lineman in the state, even though the 24/7 rankings have him at third or fourth. James Alosio at Temple, his brother has already signed. Trevor Pay, his brother already plays. Bryce Radford grew up a BYU guy. I mean, we could go down this list. Eric Wilder at Syracuse has a connection to the program as well. I think he'll get an offer soon. And, you know, he's got an offer now from, I think, five or six Mountain West schools, including Boise State. Look, there's offensive linemen everywhere for BYU. Like, you can't make the same argument about running backs or wide receivers or whatever. But when it comes to offensive linemen, as long as Funk is willing to put forth the effort to recruit, he doesn't have to be some crazy dynamic recruiter to have success and recruit talent that he can win with at the offensive line. It's just the nature of the position for BYU. It's one of the weirder things about BYU. I can't understand why Mormons produce these just corn fed giant Viking offensive linemen, but we do. So might as well take advantage of it.
Right. And I think it's in terms of the fit of the staff as well, right? There is already a solid core, right? Like the strategy and the scheme that is coming for the most part from Aaron Roderick and Fessy Satake, that is in place. That isn't going to change. They are plugging Daryl Funk into something that is already successful. And so if there's that cohesion, especially, you know, and some of it is going to be a fit thing. And I, you know, this was very locked down. We heard a couple names, but it was really mostly just, you know, it was very tight lipped. And the only names we were hearing were the things like the TJ Woods. Like, you can guess, like, okay, well, he was at Utah State. There's some familiarity with the staff. Like, that was the kind of names we were hearing, but it was kind of just the guesses from the surface level. And we kind of snoop around on social media, try to find different things, look at different names. And, you know, it was very apparent that Coach Roderick was extremely thorough in trying to uncover who he thought was not only going to do the best job as a technician of getting what he could out of the offensive line, but also finding that fit with the staff of, hey, look, we're not trying to rebuild an entire new offense. Like, yes, we understand that you have things to share and bring to the table, but we have something that worked and is working, and you are plugging in a gap. This is not a rebuild. And
which is a great point. I mean, that really is a unique dynamic to this offensive coordinator, offensive, I guess, coach search. It's rare that a guy like Jeff Grimes goes from BYU, a G5 school, or a non-P5. I don't want to offend anybody calling BYU a G5 school. I'm so sorry. A non-P5 school. It's so rare to see a guy like Grimes going from a non-P5 to a P5 and not take his entire coaching staff with him, or at least half, right?
Like, right.
A good chunk of it. He was initially not going to take anybody. Nobody.
Right. Like, because Ryan P was going to go.
Yeah, if it wasn't for some crazy internet, you know, search that somebody pulled up some paparazzi tabloid article from 2009, he wouldn't have taken anybody. And if I was a Baylor fan, I'd have been kind of freaking out and worried about that. That, wait a minute, BYU replaced you in 12 hours and you're not bringing a single coach with you? What the hell did we get here? Anyway, so very weird, unique, a unique coaching search, and you're dead on, Garrett, that really Coach Roderick just needed to find a guy who can continue the momentum. He didn't need a guy to come in and revitalize, revamp the offensive line, just continue what the offensive line was doing. And I think Coach Funk is that guy. He's very similar. You go back to some of those late 2000s, you know, like 2009, 2010 San Diego State teams, they were tough. They rushed the ball well. They protected the quarterback well. Those were some good teams. I mean, it was good enough to get Brady Hoke to Michigan, right? Like that wasn't nothing. And things didn't pan out for Funk and Hoke at Michigan.
They ran the ball well.
But and really, like, remember that time at Michigan. That's a tough job, right? Because not that Michigan's a tough job. At that time, it was taking over for Rich Rod and having that Rich Rod spread read option offense and then coming in and trying to implement what Brady Hoke ran. Like that was tough and it didn't work, but nothing worked on that offense long term. And I think that was a big part of it. But I digress. I think Coach Funk is good. There was more coaching shakeup than just the new hires, just Coach Kloon and Coach Funk, who, by the way, both of them this week have done interviews on BYU Sports Nation. You should watch it. I'm a Sports Nation fan. I don't watch every day, but there's some quality stuff there. And this interview with these two coaches, I think, is very quality. So check it out to get to know their personalities a little bit. But the other big news, and I think we're on differing sides of this, this question, Garrett, but the big news that came was some of the coaching shakeup, particularly on the defensive side of the ball. Coach Lamb will now coach the safeties. Coach Kloon is coaching the linebackers. Tuiaki will coach the inside linemen, the defensive tackles. And then obviously Coach Guilford with the corners still. Coach Hadley, Preston Hadley, will coach the hybrids / defensive ends. And I can't tell you how many people have reached out over the course of the last, I don't know, several days and said, that seems like a huge sign of respect for Coach Hadley to be handed the defensive ends. That must mean that Kalani and Tuiaki view him as a rising star in this industry, something akin to that. What is your take on Coach Hadley's move to the hybrids / defensive ends?
Well, I mean, we talked about this, and like we even said, and our guess was even as soon as the coaching change shuffled up, like back in December, right, when we recorded, we said, whoever the coaching staff is going to have someone who is coaching more as a pass rush specialist, right? Like, and then what we're going to see, there's a four-man front. We ran a 4-2 the majority of last season. So it makes sense to break apart, and especially when the biggest deficiency is getting pressure from the defensive line, to have interior defensive line and exterior defensive line. And so it makes sense with that hybrid group to, you know, just have the defensive ends who'd be in more of rush situations and then the hybrid. And so that's something that we kind of expected, though we thought that it was going to be Coach Kloon dealing with those positions right there, rather than him taking over the linebackers, which the way it's divvied up is basically he's doing the inside linebackers and then Lamb's doing the safeties. And then Hadley has the outside linebackers and the defensive ends. And so I think my initial thought from this is from that assignment is that they finally feel like they have the bodies both on the back end and on the front to create pressure, where it's kind of in NFL terminology, like that's an edge coach. Like we have a dedicated edge coach of someone focusing like strictly on getting a pass rush, creating pressure, doing things where, you know, similar to what we saw Kyle Van Noy do his whole time at BYU. Like, yes, he was playing under Bronco where it was a 3-4 the entire time. But how many times did you see Kyle Van Noy as a stand-up defensive end playing on the line of scrimmage, doing everything that a defensive end does? And in that, like, yes, you can call it a 3-4, but if he does that, now you're in a 4-3. Right. And if he does that and you have a third safety on the field, now you're in a 4-2-5, right? Like so it's a lot of, you know, semantics in there, but I think it would have made more, given what they've coached in their past, it makes, and where they played, it would have made more sense on paper to have either Coach Clune do it or Coach Lamb take that position group on the edge. Whereas, you know, with Coach Preston Hadley taking it over, obviously it's defense is a lot, there's a lot less nuance in defensive positions, and outside of corners, you can kind of swap guys around pretty freely in terms of this is what your coaching assignment is going to be. But I do think it is a sign. It's like that Preston Hadley, and maybe it's not necessarily a huge sign of respect, like, oh, he's a rising star, but maybe he saw an opportunity of, I can expand my repertoire, and he wants to make himself a rising star, make himself a valuable person in the coaching market.
And I think that is probably closer to the truth. When I first saw it, my initial gut reaction was, oh man, were they not happy with Hadley at the safeties? That was what I thought. Were they not happy with Hadley at the safeties? Troy Warner played great. Zane Anderson did not. Like, he played okay. Not great, but meh. And behind them, there wasn't a whole lot of depth, right? Like, there hasn't been anybody who has clearly developed into the replacement for Troy Warner and Zane Anderson. We're looking at Chaz Ayu moving back and just relying on natural talent. And you're looking at Malik Moore, who has just been unable to stay in the two deep at the safety spot. You go back last year, Austin Lee was phenomenal, right? But Austin Lee had been phenomenal since he walked on campus. That was before Hadley got here. And there really wasn't anybody else who was phenomenal or even very good at the safety position in 2019. So my first thought was, they want experience at the safeties. And that's why Coach Lamb is going there, is they want to bring in somebody who has proven that they have an eye for defensive back talent on the recruiting trail, which Coach Lamb, for all of the things I've said about Coach Lamb, he is the guy who has brought in Chris Wilcox and Isaiah Heron and D'Angelo Gunter and all of those guys, Keenan Ellis, like all of those are Coach Lamb recruits. So he gets talent and he gets the secondary. I also wondered if they said, the linebackers have underperformed, so let's get Lamb out of the linebackers and back into where he's comfortable at the safety spot. Coach Clune has coached linebackers for the majority of his career. He has also coached along the defensive line. So it was a natural fit to put Coach Clune on the defense or on the linebackers. Okay, great. And Coach Tuiaki, you're going to continue to be the coordinator. You coach inside. That makes sense. That's your specialty. Perfect. Well, I guess we got to put Hadley somewhere. Like, that was kind of how I saw this playing out. Like, maybe he reached out and said, hey, I want to expand my resume. And that very well could be true. But I don't know. Maybe I'm just a naysayer. I didn't look at it and think what a lot of fans did. I didn't look at it and go, wow, like Satake must really, really see a lot in Coach Hadley. I looked at it and thought, yeah, I mean, safeties hadn't performed where people, I think, really want them to. And so now they're moving some experience there, and you're bringing Hadley to a position that he's going to work hand in hand with both the head coach and the defensive coordinator on the defensive line, where both the head coach and the defensive coordinator have made their careers.
And it is worth noting too, as well, that Ed Lamb was the safety, did handle the safeties in 2016 and 2017.
Yeah. Prior Preston Hadley to, was, yep.
At BYU before Preston Hadley was hired. So yeah, I can see that. I think it's probably a little bit of both of, you know, needing the odd man out, and Ed Lamb was a linebacker, played on the defensive line, and initially started out coaching there, but he was the defensive backs coach at the University of San Diego before he went to SUU, and then he came to, you know, handled the safeties. So he's kind of been more in the back, the back of the defense in his career. So it kind of was, someone had to go somewhere out of place. And so I do think though, it is kind of, I guess the prognostication of this is a big step for Preston Hadley is focused mainly on just the idea of, what do you expect from this position and where is it going to be? Like, how much trust is going to be put in? We know that the defensive line has struggled generating pressure, and same with that hybrid position. It's a new position that was just introduced into the defensive scheme last year. And it's like, that's something that is going to be counted on because, you know, as a safety, you're going to be in pass coverage, right? That's what your job is. Whereas this, it's like you're dealing with defensive linemen who are going to have their hand in the dirt, primarily rush stoppers. And then you're also going to have, you know, these outside backers that are going to be worked presumably the same way we saw Van Noy and Fred Warner and Sione Takitaki in their careers, where, you know, we'd see them one play up on the line of scrimmage rushing, and then the next play they're out on the numbers covering receivers. So it's just kind of, for me, it was the breadth of responsibilities that this presumably entails is why I said it's kind of more of a step of trust. But like you said too, it's also going to be working. That will be the position where Kalani spends the most time that of his spare time in practice is with that group and with Preston Hadley. And then he will also have, you know, Elisa Tuiaki there as well.
Yeah, it'll be an interesting fit. But by and large, I'm a fan of all, really, truly, of all of the coaching moves. The one thing that seems exciting to me is, from what I heard, the players really wanted Coach Clune. So they're big fans of the hire. And from what I heard, you know, Coach Mateos, Coach Grimes, like everybody heard of, you know, of who's calling the plays. Like, it's been a talking point for 2 years. Everybody heard the rumors that Coach Grimes was unhappy and, you know, all that stuff. And I have no idea what is and isn't true in that regard. But I wouldn't be at all surprised if there was some headbutting, some, you know, productive headbutting between Coach Grimes and Coach Mateos and, you know, the Fessy, Aaron Roderick, that crew. I'm anxious to see what happens with this coaching staff, because I think there will be a little bit more cohesiveness. That said, they got big shoes to fill. That offense was great. Gonzaga was great this week on Monday night.
Gonzaga has been great all year.
Yeah, they're bad. I mean, I hate it. I just hate it. Like, I don't understand it. How they're so good. It just doesn't make sense. It's like people have, like, they're not, I don't know, they're not producing crazy amounts of NBA talent. Like, they're getting guys to the league, but there aren't very many Gonzaga stars, right? Like, in the association. How does you continue to lure in all of this talent? It just doesn't make sense to me. And they smoked BYU. It wasn't even as close as the 11-point score at the end of the game.
I mean, they just play so well as a team. Like, that system is very much, it's kind of similar to, I mean, kind of like what the Patriots had with Tom Brady, and Mark Few is the Tom Brady of Gonzaga basketball, where if you walk into the Patriots locker room, or even I guess now with the Bucks, it's like, if you walk into the locker room, you know exactly how it's going to be, and you know what's expected of you, and you know what the system is going to be, and you know that you don't complain. You don't get to, you know, you're not going to complain about playing time. Everyone is going to get what they deserve, and you work hard and you bust your butt every day. And like, that is what we do. And it's just that culture that has been built, you know, over 20 years. And even, I mean, Gonzaga was good, but this hasn't been until like the last 6-7 years, right? Like, they were good for the first decade.
That's
they were
true.
They were great, or like, you know, they were good for like the first 7-8 years that he was there. And then they were great for the next 7 or 8 years, but now they've been elite, like top five program in all of college basketball for the last 7-8 years. And it's like, it's not something that has happened overnight. And so it's something that is going to take something to build towards. And it's, you know, it, frankly, it's incredible, because I don't know what the hell there is to do in Spokane, Washington. It can't be that
exciting to go there. It's awful. It's the worst place on the earth. It's not the worst place on the earth, but it's up there. I mean, Lubbock sucks. Laramie sucks. But at least in Lubbock and Laramie, you're in, you know, gun-toting, red-blooded American states.
Like Spokane. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't want to go to Spokane.
No, I don't want to go to Spokane. It's like, it's all the suck of Laramie combined with the suck of Los Angeles.
Gosh, that's if that is the best way that you can describe Spokane, Washington, I do not understand why anybody would want to.
Listen, anyone
would want to live there.
There's a reason that Preston Norton, friend of the show and referee extraordinaire, calls it Spokanistan or Spokompton. Both applicable. And I feel like both are accurate illustrations of how sucky Spokane really is. You know what I started to do this week? I started watching on Hulu, because it's officially on Hulu, Modern Family. Like, have you ever watched, or were you like me with Modern Family that it was like, oh yeah, it's good, I'll watch it when it's on, but you didn't watch it?
I mean, I like watched the first season because it like came on and I watched it, like, and then I went on my machine and came back and never got back into it. And I didn't realize that it's like still on. Like, there's like 15
seasons of that show. There's a ton. And it was always just a show that it was kind of like the Big Bang Theory. Like, I wasn't one of those guys that just watched it. But if it was on, sure. Like, you didn't have to know like every ongoing story that last season's long to understand the plot. So I've never watched Modern Family like in succession from start to finish. And I gotta say, this show makes me laugh out loud. Like, out loud funny. And I know that I'm not, you know, breaking news to people, but Modern Family, folks, it's on Hulu. And it is worth throwing into the rotation that everybody goes through of The Office, Parks and Rec, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, New Girl. Go ahead and throw this in there because it's worth it. Like, I was pleasantly surprised at how funny it was.
And how does Modern Family tie to Gonzaga or Spokane? No,
it doesn't. At all. It's on in the background, and so I just, you know, thought about it.
Oh, okay.
There's no tie. I mean, if you want me to come up with a tie, I'm pretty sure that I could.
I mean, I thought you were going to say something about you would watch that show on mute and still enjoy watching it for other reasons. But the
which also has nothing to do with Gonzaga, but yes.
So speaking, we were smoked by Gonzaga. We have no games canceled, or we have no games scheduled for this weekend because of COVID cancellations. Sources have told Give 'Em Hell Brigham today that, we won't give specifics now, but that there was at least one Big 12 team, a Big 10 team, and a Big East team that the athletic department and the scheduling, you know, not sure who handles it. I think it's Coach Fuger handles the scheduling for the basketball program. Robinson handles it. So he, you know, that they were reaching out, kicking tires, trying to find anybody that would play them, and swinging for the stars, trying to get three big, you know, these were all good names and big names that we heard. And they, all three of them, said no. They're scared. They don't want that smoke, and they don't want what the Pope is cooking. And
listen, I also don't want that smoke. Like, I know anytime, any place, anywhere is this mantra of BYU athletics, but it ended up in a loss at Coastal, and it ended up getting smoked by Gonzaga. I'm tired of the smoke, right? Like, I am a match that has been soaked in water. I watched a YouTube video of a combine that had caught on fire in the middle of a grain field and was just burning. And then at the end, it was just this smoldering ember of sadness. I am that burnt up combine that is just a smoldering ember of sadness that all you can look at, you can't even look at that combine and think, wow, that was a cool fire, because your heart goes out for the farmer who just lost his combine and his crop and his livelihood for the next 12 months. That's me. That is what the smoke has done to me. I'm tired of the smoke. I don't want any time, any place, anywhere ever again. No, it needs to be calculated who we play and when we play, because any time, any place, anywhere, it's failed. Hasn't worked. Don't do it anymore.
I will give you that. But that said, only two of the teams that we were told the discussions were happening with happened to be in the top. Only two of them are in the top 20 on Ken Palm's ratings. Okay. Only two of them. And so,
hey man, still, you know, scares me.
The other one would be beatable, but it's, you know, ratings are weird. Even after, I mean, BYU's up to number 32. Get smoked by Gonzaga, move up in the rankings.
Hey man, it's that coveted quality loss.
It is a quality loss, because
by bringing it into an 11-point loss at the end of the game, that is officially a good loss. If it would have been 20, it's just a loss.
Right, because if they expect if the models predict that Gonzaga will win by 20 and they only win by 11, it means that Gonzaga is either worse than you thought they were, or BYU is better than they thought you thought they were. It's usually a little bit of both. And so Gonzaga, they're rated, they stayed number one, but their rating dropped down a little bit. BYU got a lift. We slid in rank number 32 now. We're knocking at the door solidly in the top 40 and in the field of play. And it's, you know, I would play Gonzaga five more times if they'd let us, just because we keep moving up. It helps us the first time we played them, we went from like 60 to 55.
It's true though, man. Like losing to Gonzaga by 10 does more for BYU's resume than beating the hell out of Loyola Marymount would.
It does. And it's like,
without question.
And so it is what it is. And so I hope there were a couple other games. I know we saw like possibly playing USU again or Colorado State. Those were a couple of other names that we heard float around, a couple of Mountain West schools. I reached out and talked to someone who's a part of the basketball staff, and there was no real serious talks with either of those programs about playing this weekend. So I think same with that calculated risk of if they're going to play that game, they're not going to play it with someone where a loss will hurt them, right? Like if it's, you know, if Baylor comes out and is like, hey, we will play you guys in Waco. It's like, okay, you can, if you lose to Baylor by five on the road in Waco, everyone's like, oh, okay. Like it's different than football, right? Like it's, people take notice of a 5-point loss on the road against the number two team in the country, right? That's a big deal.
Who did more for Waco? Chip and Joanna, I don't know what their names are, or Robert Griffin III. Like, I know Waco. I mean, if we're talking about the economy of Waco,
I mean, I know the ATF. The ATF did not do good for Waco.
They were bad.
Yes.
And but that's another show. That, hey, Paramount Plus. I'm sure you saw the commercials for Paramount Plus. But that was a Paramount Network show, Waco, starring Taylor Kitsch, a.k.a. Tim Riggins.
Yep.
Was very great. Very great.
Except, do you know that the end, like the final episode and the waning moments of that show, they actually like sugarcoated it, and it's like made lighter for TV, and it's still pretty freaking bad. So I recommend watching that for anyone. It is a great show, but
I do too. And that's a good segue, Garrett.
I mean, to answer your question though, I would have to say Chip and Joe did more because they are getting their own TV channel. The DIY channel is being rebranded to Magnolia Television, and Chip and Joe are getting their own TV channel.
Yeah, you're right. They definitely did. I know that you're looking at our agenda. As I say, that's a good segue. I know you're looking at the agenda going, I don't understand how that's a segue to anything that we have written down here. But the Give 'Em L Brigham magazine is in the works. And I think there could be, I don't want to say there's going to be an article on Waco specifically, but here we are making a TV recommendation and not a sitcom. I can say this. There is going to be an article. Maybe it'll be a collaborative article that we'll work on together. Maybe it will just be one of us. I don't know. But there will be an article where we are recommending quality television for you to watch. Not sitcoms and not mainstream crap. You know, we're not going to say, hey, Breaking Bad, it's great. We're not going to do that. We're going to, you know, Waco. Hell or High Water is a show that people should be watching. It was a movie, but you should have watched Hell or High Water on Netflix. There's a lot of quality content in the streaming world that you kind of got to dig a little bit to find. There is going to be an article about that in the Give 'Em Hell Brigham magazine.
I just created the document in our content folder. And right. With your other articles that you have already started writing, you have written more than me in the magazine. So it's pretty much like on our website. You generally write more than I do.
Yeah, nobody's surprised by that.
No, but it's we are working. I think we've probably got about a third of the articles done. Again, we are looking forward to we're shooting for an April release of this. So we're about maybe six-ish weeks away. 6-7 weeks, depending on, you know, how we get this. And it's going to be, you know, it's going to be fun, and it's going to be, something that is I'm really excited about the things that we got going for the magazine. And I think as of last week, it's all eight of our sponsorship slots have officially sold out. Like our advertising,
it's huge,
is done. So
it's huge. We've got to collect, money.
Yeah. I got to do the invoices for that. So if you are listening to this and you have purchased, or we have tentatively agreed to things, I'll probably just send you an invoice. I'm not going to do this big old fancy legal mumbo jumbo contract. It's you tell us what you want us to print. You give us money. We print it. That's our contract. By you pay the money, you're agreeing that we're going to print it. And so it's, you
there's
know,
a lot of, there's going to be a lot of trust here,
right? Like I'm, you know, as I am now in the mortgage business myself and, you know, as a sponsor of the show, and you can reach out to me. And if you are interested in getting a refi, you have a purchase of yourself for yourself, but you know, we can, there's plenty of contracts and legal things to go through. I get enough of that there. I'm actually closing on a house myself next week. I'm closing on an investment property in Memphis, Tennessee next week.
So okay. Everybody ring the bell. Garrett's getting an investment property. And he wanted to say that. I could tell. I could see the glimmer in your eye. You wanted to tell the world that you were getting an investment property. I think he's graduating from pre-rich, folks. You don't have an investment property if you're still in pre-rich.
I mean, it's a Class C property that's very, my initial buy-in on this is very, very low, but my dividend, my yield on my cash on cash return is very high. So because Memphis is a great place to buy. So I am buying, I'm about to close on a house myself, and there's way too many things you got to sign and you got to deal with that. We're not about that here.
Just closed on a construction loan this week to build my own house, and it was a nightmare.
Yeah.
Like, that was just to buy dirt. I haven't even bought a house yet.
Right. And it's, so we don't believe in that legal mumbo jumbo here. We believe in being honest and sticking to our word, and your word is your bond.
And if you screw us,
we will publicly shame you.
I have no qualms ruining your business.
Yeah,
we'll do it. I mean, we won't be happy about it depending on what the business is, but we're gonna friggin' do it. I can assure you of that.
And I mean, everybody that has reached out to us, I think they're all pretty, I mean, they're upstanding individuals. I think
I've got no worries. But if it were Teespring, you know, if Teespring wanted to sponsor with us, when we exceed the net worth of Teespring, I can't wait. Dave Portnoy, and people, you know, like or hate Dave Portnoy, whatever, I don't care. He holds grudges the way I want to hold grudges. Did you know this about him? That when he decides he doesn't like you, he will go, and I don't know what kind of, whether it's champagne or wine, but he goes and he actually engraves your name on some fancy bottle. I think it is champagne. Some fancy bottle of champagne. He will have your name engraved. And when he feels like he has taken you down, he finds himself a nice quiet spot. He grabs the champagne with your name engraved, and that's what he enjoys himself with. He, you know, pops the top, has some champagne, and celebrates by himself a murder on the internet.
That is,
I want to be at that level. I want to hold grudges like Dave Portnoy.
I don't think I could ever be that petty.
I think I could. You know, I don't think I'd have very many problems being that petty.
I could try to do that, but I will probably laugh if you think of how ridiculous it is.
You continue to handle you handle the invoicing, you handle the money, I'll handle the pettiness of Give 'Em Hell Brigham Incorporated.
Okay. Which, speaking of incorporated, I also researched buying the domain name GEHB.com.
Ooh. Is it a thing?
Someone owns it because every single four-letter domain name is purchased already for every .com. And so it would have cost us about 10 Gs. Our brand's not quite there yet. So if you go to GEHB.com, it will take you nowhere other than a thing that says this is for sale because someone owns it and they're just squatting on it. But you can go to GiveEmHelpBrigham.com and you can find plenty of shirts, hats, and sweatshirts. And they're awesome. Jeff, you consistently, so it's set up that when you order a sample, it charges my credit card and I get Venmo things. I get Jeff has earned me so many miles on my credit card this year by buying samples and then Venmoing me to pay me back for them.
Well, you got to do what you got to do. Look, I am committed to this brand, and I feel like your commitment level isn't quite there, but I am to the point that if I'm not wearing something, give them hell, Brigham, something's wrong. I have enough shirts in my wardrobe that I could go like 2 full weeks without doing laundry and wear give them hell, Brigham every day.
I just need to get rid of clothes that I already have because I have too many clothes. And since I work from home, I like just don't cycle through my clothes very often because I don't go anywhere and nobody sees me.
So, I get it. I'm a big believer in the brand. I think that we can take this places. And why are we talking about this right now on the heels of talking about the magazine? Because it is the slowest time of the sports year, especially with COVID impacting basketball. At least normally you'd have a random game against like Pepperdine to talk about this week. Nothing. There is nothing going on. So we could talk about girls basketball. Shaylee Gonzalez is my girl, and she is killing it. The Lady Cougs are going to, I think, they're right on the bubble. I think they sneak into the tournament. They've got to close strong, but I think they get there. But I, with all due respect to the Lady Cougs, and I know that there's going to be people who are going to respond to this and get mad about it, I just don't know that the general audience of the Give 'em Hell Brigham podcast really is dying to know the latest in Lady Cougar hoops.
We're going to have to do some research before next week's episode before we get that on, because I got nothing.
I could talk about it. We're going to do some research because the Lady Cougs are good. Shaylee Gonzalez is great. Lauren Gustin had like 27 points, 20 rebounds the other night. She's fantastic. Sister of Porter Gustin, which is very interesting to me that she ended up at BYU because of all of the hullabaloo that went on when Porter was being recruited. Like, look, Porter was never going to go to BYU. I think we can all accept that. But all of the, I remember his mom, Sister Gustin, fighting with BYU fans who were BYU fans. The audience of GEHB, we have to be the collective goodness of BYU fans. Like, we've got to lead the charge. There is something about a BYU fan scorned on the internet that is indescribable. And I remember watching these fans say just outrageous things to this mother of a recruit.
Yes.
It was insanity.
To a recruit that didn't even have an offer from BYU.
Didn't even have an offer. Like, I know that, and this is the first thing that anytime I bring this up and I say BYU fans, right? Anytime I say that, you immediately get BYU fans saying like, well, you should go to the internet and see the SEC per capita, right? Like, there are not as many BYU fans as there are Ohio State fans, not even close. Per capita, I would be willing to bet that, what's the word I'm looking for here, Garrett? That I'm going to say inappropriate, but maybe I'm just like the gray area of tweets, not inappropriate. That makes it sound like there's, this right and wrong to how to be on the internet. That's not true. But tweets that fall into the gray area of maybe shouldn't have tweeted that by BYU fans is greater than, I'm going to say, any other fan base not named Utah. I think per capita BYU is up there. We have more than everybody else. And Utah fans are
slinging, just slinging crap on the internet. I mean, I think it's the most vitriol-filled rivalry in all of college sports, at least on the internet. Cause it's, I mean, people will do it, but it's just a weird, like the meshing of the two fan bases. And there are more BYU fans that are like that, but the level and quickness from the Utah fans of these like 1% is unmatched. Like it's even like you will see national writers will purposely say things about BYU because they know and have been like, surprise, all the Utah fans in my mentions.
Utah fans are awful. BYU fans are not far below.
Yeah, it's a 1A, 1B.
Do you think it's a church thing? Like not that the church encourages it, but is it like in the I mean, because look, like as much as Utah fans don't want to admit it, we're all the same people. Like by and large, Utah's fan base and BYU's fan base is members of the church. Is it because the church has been persecuted for so long that we have this persecution complex just ingrained into us? Is that why we're sensitive to these kinds of things?
I think so. And I think realignment did it more because it's, you know, Utah wants to say like, oh, we are not close to them. Like we got our golden ticket. We are a P5 school now. Like they are below us. And so they have that kind of like little man syndrome of we're here and we belong and we're better than you. Mm-hmm. And then BYU fans have we have the actual history and the national championship and we deserve to be there. And we are scorned because we got left out. So we are going to get pissed every time someone refers to us as a G5 school.
It's just strange. Like you don't see, I don't know, like I'm trying to think of a school, like you're never getting into arguments with the Indiana fan on the internet. Like there's not very many Texas Tech fans that are going to come and just berate your mentions with, you know, hate speech like it's just not there.
If you look at any of theirs, like I don't remember the article or the account, but there's things that track like interactions with NCAA, you know, social media accounts or whatever. And BYU is consistently in the top of like most mentions, most fan driven content. So it is one of like the top 25 fan bases in all of college sports in terms of volume. So it's, you know, it is something, and we all get in the same room. And when we feel, when hell hath no fury, like a Cougar fan scorned.
So strange. And you know, whatever, please just behave on the internet. Let's represent the brand in a good way. The last thing I'm going to say about what I hope our internet activity consists of is hashtag give them hell, Brigham. Hashtag GEHB. I want to make that. You want to make that the sick'em, the hook'em, the gig'em, the eight clap.
Give them hell, man.
The let's fly of the Air Force. We want that to be everywhere.
Yeah.
And it starts with us.
It starts with us. And if you listen to this, if you see something BYU related, you like something happen, it's like, you know, hashtag give them hell. Hashtag GEHB. Like make that the thing. Jason, are you? Jack DeMooney? We know you listen to this. Next time offers go out, you see something. Next time, Jack DeMooney, next time you call somebody your nephew, we want to see the hashtag.
We do. We need to see the hashtag. In fact, I'm going to do it right now. Here we are. Kai Nakua just tweeted out earlier this evening that he is signed with the 49ers for next year. I am quote tweeting his tweet with two hashtags. Give him hell. What are we doing? Give them hell, Brigham? No, it's got to just be give them hell.
Give them hell.
And then GEHB. And that needs to be the calling card. It's got to happen because right now it's go Cougs, right? Like hashtag go Coug. There's so many freaking Cougars. Nobody knows. Are we talking about Wazoo? Did you accidentally spell Cougars the right way and you meant to be talking about Houston, but you're intelligent? Like there's just lots of Cougars, man. Like we've got to branch out on the internet from go Cougs. It's time.
And yes,
this is how,
and our podcast is doing it. And just as we give them hell, so too will the masses
give them hell.
Give them hell, Jeff. It's been a great episode. It's going to be a good week, and we will be back next Wednesday night to record another episode. Good night.